My God, Sarah rose and breathed. Doris was nude and disturbingly passive. Sam had his bag open, passing over his stethoscope. Sandy moved in, drawing some blood for analysis.
Who does this sort of thing?
Sarah whispered to herself. The same people who killed Pam, the surgeon replied quietly.
Pam? Doris asked. You know her? How?
The man who brought you here, Sandy said. He's the one.
The one Billy killed?
Yes, Sam answered, then realized how foolish it would sound to an outside listener.
I just know the phone number,
Billy said, drunk now from the pressure of nitrogen gas. Give it to me, Kelly ordered. Billy did as he was told, and Kelly wrote it down. He had two full pages of notes now, names, addresses, and a few phone numbers. How did the drugs come in?
Don't know.
We have to do better than that. Hiss. Again, Billy screamed, pain filling every cubic inch of his racked body. The pain was beyond anything he had ever felt, and beyond anything he had ever inflicted. He was unable even to scream now.
Please,
the whisper carried over the speaker. Kelly brought the pressure back up slowly, stopping at 110 feet. No pity, Kelly told himself. He would have killed an animal in the condition he'd inflicted on this object. Yet he knew that had the situation been reversed, Billy would not have felt what he was feeling. Billy broke. He started talking in an uneven voice, but one which finally was completely truthful. The information was remarkable, but it had to be true. No person like this had the imagination to make it up. By midnight, Kelly was sure that he'd emptied Billy's mind of all the useful data it contained. The damage had been done, as tissues torn loose wandered about blood vessels, closing them off one at a time. Soon his sightless eyes proclaimed Billy's madness, and what came out of the chamber was not a man. But then, it had never been. Kelly loosed the hatch, pulling Billy out and laying him on the concrete floor. He was still breathing, Kelly noted, and that was just fine. Glad it was over. There's a likely spot, Kelly told himself. Springer was crawling along as Kelly scanned the shore. He lifted Billy into the dinghy and rowed to the muddy bank. He hauled Billy onto the land and laid him down. You stay here now.
Stay.
That's right. Kelly pushed the dinghy back into the river and soon had Springer moving back up the Potomac River. 2 more hours and Kelly saw the marina at Quantico Marine Base. Tired, he selected a guest berth at one end of the piers.
Who might you be?
A voice asked in the dark. The name's Clark, Kelly replied. You should be expecting me.
Oh, yeah. Nice boat,
the man said, heading back to the dockhouse. Within minutes, a car came down the hill from officer quarters.
You're early,
General Marty Young said as he got out. Might as well get started, sir. Come aboard.
Thanks, Mr. Clark.
He made himself comfortable.
Dutch says you're going to be part of the op.
Yes, sir.
Sure you can hack it?
Kelly smiled briefly. Yes, sir. What sort of people have signed on?
They're all force recon. We're training them pretty hard.
Young smiled.
We need to get you nice and fit, too.
Kelly smiled again. Fair enough, General.
So what's so damned important?
Tony Piaggi asked.
I think somebody's trying to make a move on me, Tucker said. I want to know who.
Tell me what's happened.
Somebody's been taking pushes down on the west side, Tucker said.
I read the papers, Piaggi assured him. You have any real enemies on the street?
I've made sure the cops know about my major competitors.
Piaggi nodded. That was within normal business practice, but somewhat risky.
Sounds like a pro doing this, Tucker said. Somebody really good, you know?
Piaggi nodded, while his mind was in a quandary.
It isn't one of mine, Henry.
I don't think you're doing it. I think you're too smart, Tucker said.
Glad to hear that.
Tony smiled and poured 2 glasses of wine.
What about Eddie?
What do you mean?
Is he ever going to get made?
That's kind of touchy, Henry. Piaggi paused. No, he said quietly. Nobody thinks Eddie's got what it takes.
Maybe he's looking for a way to prove different.
Piaggi shook his head. No, Eddie's going to make a good living off this. He knows that.
Who, then?
Tucker asked.
Who else knows enough?
Henry, taking Eddie out would cause major problems. But I'll check around.
Thank you,
Tucker said. He stood and left Tony alone with his wine. There were about 25 of them standing in the morning mist, stretching and chatting among themselves as the squad NCOs walked up and down the line. Heads turned when the general's car stopped and a man got out. They saw he wore the wrong sort of fatigues and wondered who the hell he was, especially since he had no rank insignia at all. He walked right up to the senior NCO. "You Gunny Irvin?" Kelly asked. Master Gunnery Sergeant Paul Irvin nodded politely as he sized the visitor up.
"Correct, sir. Are you Mr. Clark?"
Kelly nodded.
"What kind of shape you in?" Irvin asked.
"Only one way to find that out," Kelly answered. Irvin smiled broadly.
"Good. I'll let you lead the run, sir. Our captain's away somewhere, jerking off."
Oh, shit. 40 minutes later, Kelly was still in the lead. Not staggering was his only concern, and that was becoming difficult.
"Left," Irvin said, pointing. The path, just a dirt trail, took them into the pine woods.
Buildings. Oh, Jesus, I hope that's the stopping place. The path wound around a little, but there were cars there, and that had to be... What? Mannequins.
"Detail," Irvin called out. "Halt! Stand at ease."
"Good morning, Mr. Clark." James Greer and Marty Young waved him over to one of the buildings.
"Good morning. I hope you all slept well,"
Kelly told them. "You volunteered, John," Greer pointed out.
"They're 4 minutes slow this morning," Young observed. "Not bad for a spook, though."
Kelly shook his head wryly. It took him a minute or so to realize what this place was. It was a mock-up of the POW camp Cinder Green, which they were going to attack. The cars, parking lot, and mannequins were camouflage in the event of enemy satellites photographing the place.
"There's your hill," Young pointed.
"Trees are taller here," Kelly said. "We drill tonight?"
"Think you're up to it?"
"I suppose we need to know that. When's the mission going to go?"
"You don't need to know that yet," Greer answered. "For now, watch how these men are setting up." Greer and Young headed off to their car.
"Aye, aye," Kelly replied to their backs, then looked around in amazement.
"Your lad seems to know his business," General Young observed at about 1:45 the next morning. "It's a lot to ask him to do something like this the first night, Marty," Dutch Maxwell countered.
"Well, hell, Dutch, if he wants to play with my Marines..."
They stood on the hilltop overlooking the training site. 15 of the recon Marines were on the slopes, and their job was to detect and eliminate Clark as he climbed to this perch. Even General Young thought it an overly harsh test on Clark's first day with the team. But Jim Greer had made a very big deal of telling them how impressive the lad was, and spooks needed to be put in their place. Even Dutch Maxwell agreed with that.
"What a crummy way to earn a living," said the Admiral.
"Lions and tigers and bears," Young chuckled. "Oh, my.
I don't really expect him to make it here the first time. We have some fine people in this team, don't we, Irvin?"
"Yes, sir," the Master Gunnery Sergeant agreed at once.
"So, what do you think of Clark?" Young asked next.
"Seems like he knows a thing or two," Irvin allowed. "I like his eyes. He's got cold eyes. He's been around the block."
They spoke in low murmurs. Kelly was supposed to get here, but they didn't want their voices to make it too easy for him.
"I told my people what would happen if this guy gets through the line on his first try." "Don't you Marines know how to play fair?" Maxwell objected with an unseen smile. Irvin handled the answer.
"Sir, Fair means all my Marines get home alive. Fuck the others. Beg your pardon, sir.
Funny thing, Sergeant. That's always been my definition of fair, too.
Been following baseball, Marty? Maxwell asked, relaxing. No way Clark would make it.
I think the Orioles look pretty tough.
Gentlemen, we're losing our concentration, Irvin suggested.
Quite right, Maxwell responded.
The men settled back into stillness, watching the illuminated hands of their watches turn to 3 o'clock, the operation's agreed stop time. They didn't move or speak, and hardly breathed. Finally, it was 2:55. Marty Young stood and stretched, fishing in his pocket for a cigarette.
Anybody got a smoke? A voice murmured.
There you go, Marine, Young said.
He held out one to the shadow and flicked his trusty Zippo. Then he jumped back a step.
Shit.
Personally, General, I think Pittsburgh looks pretty tough this year. Kelly took one puff, then dropped the cigarette to the ground.
How long have you been here? Maxwell demanded.
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my, Kelly mimicked. I killed you around 1:30, sir.
You son of a bitch, Irvin said. You killed me.
And you were very polite about being quiet, too, Kelly replied. Maxwell turned on his flashlight. Mr. Clark just stood there, a rubber knife in his hand, his face painted with green and black shadows, and for the first time since the Battle of Midway, his body shuddered with fear. The young face split into a grin as he pocketed his knife.
How the hell did you do that? Maxwell demanded.
Pretty well, I think, Admiral, Kelly chuckled.
Sir, if I told, then everybody'd be able to, right?
Irvin walked next to the civilian.
Mr. Clark, sir, I think you'll do.